Okay, so to complete today's roster, we have Olivia Dumitrescu. She's representing this this work, which is related to the exact WKB, but it has to do with topological recursion and quantum curves.
First, I would like to thank the organizers for the invitation. It is a pleasure to be here. So today I will talk on topological recursions for Higgs bundle. And the way the plan for the lecture, I will start with the easiest example. Of topological recursion, that is the recursion of Kathon numbers. So the Kathon numbers count the number of cellular graphs, and the way we obtain the recursion, it is edge contractions axioms. And the importance of this example is that the Kathon numbers are related to the count of lattice points inside MGN. And so it gives us a recursion for the free energies of the Witten-Concewicz intersection numbers, Virasoro type condition. And then the way we wanted to generalize this example is first we extend it to Hitchin vibrations, so to Higgs bundles. And first we did the holomorphic case. And then the meromorphic, we had to extend it to the meromorphic case in order to cover, Higgs bundles with, that have entries meromorphic one forms in order to cover this example, for example, of Kathon numbers. And then finally, the second one is that the method of which we obtain the recursion is that H contractions axioms are equivalent to topological quantum field theory. And in particular, we use this as an example. We generalize the computation for for the Witten-Concewicz intersection numbers to from the Gromov-Witov of a point to the Gromov-Witov of a stack BG, where this is just a point modulo G and G is a finite group. So I will try to cover as much as I can today. And first I will start with the definition of the Kathon numbers. So there are, well, the general ones, there are more than 15 ways of defining Kathon numbers. They appear everywhere in the nature. So let us choose one of them and define C of M to be the number of ways to arrange M pairs of parentheses. For example, C1 is 1. This is one pair of parentheses. C2 is 2. We can arrange them like this or like this. C3 is 5. And 1. And so on. So there is a, well, of course, these are binomial, they can be expressed in terms of Newton binomials, but there is a relation between them that Cn plus 1 equals, there is a recursion relation that this is equal to the sum of smaller ones, Ca times Cb, such that A plus B equals to M. So we will try to generalize to higher Gino-Schiattle numbers. So let us first give the definition of cellular graphs. So these are one skeleton of a cell decomposition. On a connected neuron surface. So this means that we have a set of vertices and a set of edges. So let us consider now the generating function of the Kettle numbers. So let me define z of x to be the sum ck times 1 over x to k plus 1 when k is at least 0. And let us define z star of x to be x minus z of x. Then, as an exercise, we can check that z times z star is equal to 1. I mean, z star is 1 over z. And this is if and only if this relation, this recursion for the Kettle relation happens. So this means, in fact, that this is 1 over z of x. Or in other words, we will write it as x equals z plus 1 over z. And usually, we may also introduce another variable, y equals to minus z. And we will call this the spectral curve of Kettle numbers. So it is the easiest example of spectral curve. So now we want to define higher Gino-Schiattle numbers. So this will count the number of cellular graphs that we can draw on genus G and then with n more points, Riemann surfaces. So let us define CGN of mu 1 up to mu n to be the number of cellular graphs of genus G with n vertices, let's say p0, pn, such that each one of the p1 up to pn, such that at each one of the vertices, the degree is mu I. And at each one of the vertices, we will have an edge with an outgoing arrow. And this will kill mainly the automorphisms of cellular graphs. So automorphisms of cellular graphs will have to fix the collection of points, and then they will permute the edges, and we'll have precisely this cyclic permutation. By fixing an arrow, will kill all the automorphisms. So let us see, for example, what happens if genus is 0 and n equals to 1. So we are looking at a sphere, and we have only one more point. And what are all the possible cellular graphs we can draw? Well, because we have only one vertex, then we can only make loops. We have no ways of making edges. So for example, this would be one example of cellular graphs, and we have to place one arrow. But moreover, every Riemann surface comes with an orientation. So we have an induced orientation, and to this we can associate a pair of parentheses. So we just start with the arrow vertex, and we open a parenthesis, and then we go around the orientation. We open one here, we close it one here, open, close it, close it. So this will correspond to that one. And for example, let us look at this example now. And let's say the orientation is this one. Well, we will start from this one. So we will open a parenthesis. And now we have this one, this one, this one is, oh, it's precisely the same as before. So anyway, this we can see in this case that the one observation is because we have only one more point, then the degree of that vertex is always even, because we have only loops. So everything that starts from that point has to end there. So for example, the degree of a vertex, if I choose something like this, this will be degree 7. So what we have proved is just that C01 of 2m equals Cm. So this is the number of solar graphs, and that is the Catan number. So let us see the Catan recursion. And this is maybe the easiest example for topological recursion. So we can now write a recursion to compute the number of cellular graphs, Cgn, of mu 1 up to mu n, is the sum, j comes from 2 to n, of mu j times Cg n minus 1, mu 1 plus mu j minus 2, mu n, so here mu j is skipped, plus the sum alpha plus beta equals mu 1 minus 2 of Cg n plus 2, alpha beta mu 2 up to mu n, plus sum g1 plus g2 equals 2g, and I and j cover the set 2 up to n, Cg1 I plus 1, alpha vi Cg2 j plus 1 of beta vj. So how do we obtain this recursion? And at the end of the talk, we will come back to this to see that actually this set of axioms recover the two-dimensional topological field theories. So we have edge shrinking axioms. So for example, if we want to contract an edge, so let's see. Sorry?
This Catalan recursion.
Yes.
You're saying that this is a large number of recursion relations which can be used to actually compute these generalized Catalan numbers?
Yes, yes. So there are three parts. So this is the sum of mu j of Cg n minus 1. And here we are summing the 1 plus j minus 2. So we are fixing, let's say, one vertex that will start. And I will show there one. So this is one of their sums. And then here there are two other components. And I will describe in a moment what these are. This is the Catalan number Cg n plus 2, alpha beta, mu 2 up to mu n. This is the sum of two of them. So these are multiplied. All g1 plus g2 equals to g. So all the possible ways how we can split a genus. And then all the possible ways how we can split the collection of the remaining points to up to 2n. And these are disjoint unions of cg1 I plus 1. So we just introduced an alpha on the first entrance and a beta on the second entrance, and then we split them. So this is everything within a sum. And here I'm closing the parentheses. I'm sorry. So the method, these are the edge contractions axioms. So assuming we'll have a vertex v1 and then another vertex vj, so here we'll have mu1 minus 1, and here mu j minus 1. This is a degree of this arrow because this is 1. This is included there. So when we are shrinking this arrow, then what we are doing is, in fact, to reduce the number of more points. So I will have precisely n plus 1 marked points. And this is the degree of this one is mu 1 plus mu j minus 2. Now, in order to make this, I will have to choose an orientation. And let's see, we are choosing this orientation from the counterclockwise. Every Riemann surface will come with an induced orientation, so we can choose one of them that we will fix for all. And there will be mu j choices of doing such operation. So the other axiom, it is H contractions axiom. So assuming we have cellular graphs on a Riemann surface, and this is a loop within the vertex 1. Here will be alpha and here will be beta. So mu 1 equals 2 plus alpha plus beta. We will shrink the loop and we will split apart these two sets of edges that are disconnecting this loop. So here will be alpha edges, here will be beta edges. And we will choose again the orientation. So let's see, this is the orientation from the counterclockwise direction, and this will inherit it, the first one that it meets in the counterclockwise direction. But in this case, there will be two cases corresponding to this situation, and this will depend on whether or not we are disconnecting the graph. So for example, we have a Riemann surface, and here we have a loop with an arrow, and this is the P. So this is the first case of cutting a handle. So in this case, we are reducing the genus because the corresponding Riemann surface will have one less genus. So this is G minus 1 and then plus 1. And one more one point, because this point here will correspond to two points here.
So
yes. Yes. Yes, this is, let's say, the case A. And finally, the case B is when we are disconnecting the graph, so we can cut a neck. So that we have a Riemann surface, and we choose to contract a loop here. Then we will get, let's see, this is the I part, and this is the J part. And then the genus have to sum up. The number of more points, I of them will be here, J of them will be there. So this will be I and J. So in this case, we disconnected the genus. So this is a proof of that recursion. So we will come back to this at the end, near the end of the talk. But the Ketlin recursion is still on the board. So one thing to look at is, for example, this quantity 2g minus 2 plus n. If we compute this quantity on the left-hand side and the right-hand side, we will see that actually it drops by 1 on the right-hand side. So this reduces by 1. And this is like the essence of topological recursion. This will be, in fact, the number of pairs of bands decomposition of a Riemann surface. So for example, let's like g equals 2 and n equals 5. So we have a Riemann surface of genus 2 with n with 5 marked points. So we can cut it here, 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 one in the middle, and three more here. So when we compute this number, then this number is precisely 7, I think. And it's precisely the number of pairs of bands that we see in this decomposition. So this is, yes.
So, I'm having trouble understanding the relationship between the recursion and what's happening on this side of the board.
Mm-hmm.
So are you saying that these are facts which you can use to prove this recursion?
this is, no, I mean, this is a remark, let me say this way. But this is what makes the recursion, I mean, this is what topological recursion is. It is the reduction of one of this quantity. In fact, one will use this fact not in this proof, but in the proof of the equivalence between the topological quantum field theories and these contraction axioms. So I just wrote it as an observation, more or less.
Okay, but the first edge contraction axiom, is that making a statement about the number of graphs which have
yes.
edges?
Yes.
To the number of graphs of a different type?
Yes.
Okay, so this is an equality of numbers of graphs?
Yes, this is an equality of numbers of graphs with these axioms. So this is the easiest example of recursion. So what do we do with it? Let us look now at the generating function of the Catlin numbers. Yes. Yes. This one? Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, this is minus one. Sorry? Yes, I mean, here I have n marked points, and I'm contracting one edge. This means I'm just removing one marked point.
So you don't change the surface?
I don't change the genus of the surface.
And, okay, and for the second case,
yes.
you drew some pictures for the graphs,
yes.
and you drew some pictures for the surfaces. So how those graphs are located on the surface?
For example, here I place vertex P, so this will be vertex P. Uh-huh. So now I can have a bunch of edges here, for example, and they will be connecting in a certain way. Yeah, and here it is the same. I will have a bunch of things, yeah, in this way, and then in the other part. Okay, so now we will look at the generating function of the free energies. The free energies, the generating function of the Catlin numbers. So let us take FGN of x1 up to xn to be the sum of all mu1 up to mu n of all the possible Catlin numbers over mu1, mu n times the product of the variables xi to minus mu i. So this is like the If this xi will be exponential, we call that this is a discrete Laplace transform of generalized Catlin numbers. So the idea is that this count of Catlin numbers that we did is in A model side, and taking the Laplace transform, we will move to the B model side. And here we'll make a change of coordinates. And first we didn't know why we had to do the change of coordinates, and then I will explain it by going through to the Hitching systems case. So let us do this change of coordinate. Mainly, this is the z. So then what we can find is that if we look now at the free energies, and we look at the top, I mean, the top, the highest degree part of the free energies, then this is a homogeneous polynomial in the variables ti, and its expression is minus 1 to the n over 2 g minus 2 plus n times the sum d1 plus dn equals 3 g minus 3 plus n of the Witten-Concewicz intersection numbers times the product of 2di minus 1 double factorial times the ti over 2 to the di plus 1.
Does that mean that when we make the change of variable from, mm-hmm. from the x's to the t's, mm-hmm. that this fgn is mm-hmm. a polynomial?
The top degree part is a polynomial. Usually it's Laurent. Yeah, but the top degree part is a homogeneous polynomial of degree 6g minus 6 plus 3n. No, it's polynomial. It's polynomial. The top degree part is polynomial. This one is not, in general. It doesn't have an infinite number of no. So mainly the let me write here the remark or the proposition. So the recursion of Ketel numbers induces a recursion of the free energies, FGNs of T1 up to TN. And this is the and this gives the Virasoro constraint of the Witten-Concewicz intersection numbers. So more or less, the inner Toronton recursion is like Virasoro type. Of Witten-Concewicz intersections. So this is, let's say, the recursion of free energies. And the second part is the quantization. So let us define. So now we will come back to this polynomial and we'll make all the variables equal. And this is what we call principal specialization. So we will define Sn of t to be the sum 2g minus 2 plus n equals to m of 1 over n factorial of fgn ttt and the psi of x and h to be, oh, maybe t, sorry, to be the exponential of the generating function h to the m minus 1 times sm of t. Then there exists a second order differential operator that is h d dx squared plus h bar x plus x h d dx plus 1 that kills the generating function of the free energies. And this is what we call the quantization. Such that, well, the semi-classical limit when h approaches 0 recovers the spectral curve of the Ketel number. So recovers the spectral curve that we started with in the beginning. So this is this was one of our first examples that we have of recursions. And 1 or 2 years ago, we're trying to understand this example and to try to generalize it in a bigger framework. So let me now, I'm sorry, yeah. Yes, please, I'm sorry.
In order to obtain the second order differential operator,
yes.
What information do you need to fix?
Yeah. So the point is that once you know the spectral curve, this form will be determined. Because this form is like replacing h bar ddx, y equals h bar ddx. So what we did was for every spectral curve we have, we induce a differential operator, and we check by hand that this kills the generating function of the psi. So more or less, we have a recursion of the FGNs that we obtained from the first part. So FGNs were these ones. Let's say in this case they were coming from the Ketlin, but we did it general.
We know that it's possible to have two differential operators that, I mean, two WK families which have the same spectral curve, but they're not the same. The spectral curve doesn't contain all the information of the WKG family.
I think. this operator. Yes.
Very precisely.
Yes. So I mean, more or less, the topological recursion gives a recursion of the free energies. And so once we do the principal specialization, the recursion of free energies determines differential recursions of the S. And this differential recursions of the S is exactly the same one that we find when we develop this semi-classical limit. So there will be, yes, it will be the 0,1 and the 0,2. And I will talk about this later, yes. I will introduce them when I talk about the Hitchin framework. Yes, thank you. I can try to clean. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess both of them, but cannot. Okay, so how do we understand this in terms of Hitchin vibration? Thank you. So we have the spectral curve, x equals z plus 1 over z, and y equals 2 minus z. So one thing we can do is to, I mean, this would be, if we graph this, this would be an honest parabola, a smooth curve. But if we view it inside, let's say, C star squared. But let us instead try to see it inside a Hirzebruch surface. And where is it coming from? We will explain. This is the compactification of the cotangent of P1. So in this case, this is a ruled surface, and it's toric. So toric surfaces, they are described by fans or by the dual picture that are polytops. So this will be like the 0,0 chart. And let's say this will be infinity-infinity chart. These charts can be determined by the shape of the polytop. But we can even write down the change of coordinates. So we will consider, in fact, this spectral curve to lie on the 0,0 chart. And by a change of coordinates, y dx equal v du, u is 1 over x, and w is 1 over v, we will end up in the infinity-infinity chart. And this curve, this spectral curve, will have the shape u to the fourth minus uw plus w squared. So we can see that in this chart it has a nodal singularity. Fu equals to fv equals to f at 0,0 vanishes. And not only this, but the fact that here we have a u to the fourth would give us that it has a nodal singularity with flex conditions. I mean, an infinitely near singularity, how I would call it. F2? Yeah, I mean, sorry? Yeah. So we try to extend it via the Hitchin system point of view, because the spectral curve of the Hitchin system was realized inside the compactified realized first in the cotangent bundle. In this case, we are just compactifying that bundle, yes. So we will do it in a late, I mean, I will explain it later on how to continue. So in fact, this is singular at infinity, and here it has a flex singularity, and this will correspond to an irregularity of the, to the, essential singularity to the differential operator. Okay, So let us see how do we see it as a, well, we can see it as a Higgs bundle. I mean, let's take the trivial one. I will take the trivial bundle of vector bundle of rank 2, and the downstairs curve is P1. And let us look at phi to be given by 0 dx minus dx and minus x dx. So it is a 2x2 matrix of 1 forms. And the point is that x dx is not holomorphic. It has a simple 0, well, at 0, but it has a pole of order 3 at infinity. I mean, like changing charge of P1. So because it has a pole over 3 at infinity, what we do is to consider the sigma not inside the compactified P1, not inside the cotangent of P1, but the compactified. That is the ruled surface F2. So let's say this ruled surface, we can even describe this spectral curve as divisors. So the Picard group, this is a Herzenbruch surface, and the Picard group is spanned by the class of a fiber in the negative section. So this is the fiber, this is the negative section, this is the section, so this is the zero section, and this is the section at infinity. When we compactify this thing, we introduce one section at infinity, and this is it. So the intersection theory is fibers don't intersect. A fiber intersects the zero section once, and P is the negative section of this ruled surface. And we had a spectral curve, y squared plus xy plus 1 equals to 0. This was a spectral curve that we found from the Catalan numbers. So we can see, well, it will always intersect the class of fiber twice because it comes from Higgs bundles of rank 2, 2x2 Higgs bundles. And it will intersect zero section zero times, because if I just plug in y equals to zero in this equation, I get no solution. I get 1 equals to zero. So now, because this mainly has to look like AB plus, I mean, AF plus BB, for example, we can determine A and B via this intersection theory. And we see that the spectral curve is, in fact, 2B plus 4F. So if it was, this is how we write it in terms of divisors, but we saw that when we are moving the charts, we get a singularity here. So the way to deal in with singularities in algebraic geometry, we want to desingularize. And the way to desingularize is, well, either degenerate or blow up the singularities. So in general, the blow up the singularities is our favorite way. So this is, to desingularize it, this is only a double point, so we just blow it up once. I'm sorry. So blowing up once and taking the proper transform after this blow up, we will get to the spectral curve of the topological recursion. So blow up. Sigma 1? Which is
sigma?
Sigma times P?
Yeah, sigma 1, sigma 1.
Here?
Sigma 1, yeah.
No, it's just silly. I just wanted to say that I want to interpret this spectral curve kind of via the Higgs bundle to a divisor inside a ruled surface. And in order to identify that divisor, I have to use the basis. So to identify it is just, by plugging in. And I'm saying this will have to intersect twice the fiber, like this, and will have to intersect zero times the zero section. So this must be this divisor. Okay, so let's blow up the singularity once. So the ruled surface will be like this, more or less. So we introduce an exceptional divisor, but we will consider the spectral curve. sigma hat to be precisely 2b plus 4f minus 2e. So we are taking the proper transform of sigma under the blow up. Okay, so what did we gain by this? So here, this is the minimal desingularization, but if you want to completely make this curve distinct from the infinity section, you have to blow up actually three times because of the infinite linear singularities. And I think this is related to the wall crossing phenomenon. But for the sake of simplicity, I will say it like this. So what we discovered is now a spectral curve sigma hat, and it comes as a double cover of P1. And in fact, we can compute the genus from the genus formula, for example, and get down that this is actually a sphere. So this is a sphere. And in other words, it is a double cover of P1 branched at the two points. So this is what we can compute so far. And the quantization applies, but this is a more general picture. Every time we will discover like a differential operator in one of these charts. So every time like this differential operator, I mean it's a D module, and locally it will have one in this shape that we wrote down, it just correspond to one of the affine charts. Okay, so let us try to do this in general. I mean, I will say a few words for, I mean, what the topological recursion is. Please. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This was taking the t variable. So we made a change of when we made the change of variables, z equals to t plus one over t minus one. What I mean, t was the variable of the normalization. This is why we made it more or less to solve the singularity at infinity. So topological recursion does not applies only to smooth curves. So how do we deal with singular curves? And all the examples that we know, the Airy functions, and they were all singular, and all happened over P1. So we had to deal with the singularities in the second paper, and this is how we deal with it. Because otherwise we don't get, we get nothing.
But does that mean that you retain a differential operator on all of P1?
The differential operator, it is defined locally. I mean, that differential operator that kills the psi, it's locally. It's
not a global
differential operator on the original curve? Well, we think we can glue the corners, but we didn't do it, in fact. So that this expression of quantization was local. Yes. Well, okay, sorry. I mean, it's very easy. What I do, I just put a y dx. Let me say a y dx and minus y dx, more or less. And I'm looking at the characteristic polynomial. So I will get y times y plus x, and then plus 1 dx squared. And this is precisely y squared plus x y plus 1 dx squared. So this, I recover the spectral curve. I can choose more. Yes, it's not uniquely determined.
But how does it affect the different choices of p? How does that affect the final quantization?
I don't know. I mean, I think we are doing the quantization to the spectral curve, not to the Higgs field. So, there is a whole family of Higgs fields that we have the spectral curve that the fiber is a Jacobian. So we are quantizing the spectral curve. No, not on the phi, no. So now to say a few words on topological recursion. What do we need? So we need an input data that is the choice of a double cover. And in this case, it was sigma hat over P1, I mean, over C. Let's say a double cover of Riemann surfaces. And they have to be smooth. And we need the choice of a one form on the spectral curve. So this one here is called the spectral curve of the topological recursion. And the two form on the spectral curve. So I'm using this notation because here we desingularize it. So mainly this needs to be smooth. So this is the input. And the output is, so recursively we will get an recursion of meromorphic n forms. And so the output in this particular case of Higgs bundles will be a recursion of free energies and then the quantization. So what kind of invariant it computes? We know so far that it computes Hurwitz numbers. So in this case, as we saw it here, in the case that we dealt with the Higgs bundles, we will get only algebraic curves, like polynomials. But this Hurwitz numbers is not, it's analytic. It has exponential inside. So it's not one of these guys. It computes not polynomials. And also it computes the Gromov open with an invariance of a Torricalabi-L. So maybe here I will spend some time to say a few words of what this is. So, for example, every time we get a Higgs bundle, we saw in the previous lecture that we get a correspondent Calabi-L. Yeah, I'm sorry. Maybe I should wait a moment until it dries. So more or less, I mean, the motivation, we get Calabi-L that is of the form UV is the spectral curve. I will write it in this way. Before it was written in the age coordinate. And this lives inside. I will introduce this notation C and then the cotangent of C. So before, the Riemann surface beyond was denoted by sigma, the spectral curve there. So this is conic vibration in singular along the spectral curve. So if we take this C not to be, I mean, to be the open part of C star, in this case, the cotangent is just C star cross C star, then this was... Then this Calabi-L UV equals H of XY is the mirror dual of the spectral curve that is H equals to 0. So this is a Calabi-L. In this case, is a Torricalabi-L. So the theorem, and this was the name of the remodeling conjecture, it is due to Melissa Liu and Einhard and so on. Is that the open Gromov with an invariance of this Calabi-L? I don't remember the notation. It was denoted Y before. Are computed via topological recursion applied to the spectral curve h of xy equals to 0, so in the affine coordinates. But in general, if C is a general Riemann surface, there is no theory. And this is the case that we did. Yeah, I mean, we can choose different. Yeah, there is. We can choose different unstable geometries.
Different?
Yeah, the unstable cases. But in, I mean, we. Of course, not all of them can. I mean, are. Yeah.
I'm just asking whether we can basically take a generic one form or a generic two form, or so, is there something very strict that we must satisfy?
So I think Einaud did it for different choices, but in our case, the way we did this Higgs bundle, this quantization of Higgs bundles, because we wanted to generalize two or three examples that we knew before, and in this case, this was kind of fixed, and it came from the geometry of the cotangent bundle. So this is why we think that the Higgs in moduli space is the kind of the right generalization of topological recursion. So far, before our work, this topological recursion was done only over these open sets that are affine, C star. And what we did was to say, look, there is a geometry behind. You can take any Riemann surface of any genus, and as long as you stay in the framework of Hitchin vibrations or a little bit, or different, mild differences, then this extends naturally. So these two different theories, let's say the Hitchin vibrations and the topological recursion, have the same spectral curve. This was our philosophy.
So it's a holomorphic form, right? Globally defined from sigma till the omega. Omega 0,1, is it globally defined?
Yeah. I will come back on this. So it depends if the Higgs bundle is holomorphic or meromorphic. So in our first paper, the Hitchin moduli space that we just saw, the introduction to this, dealt with holomorphic Higgs bundles. And in this case, this omega 0,1 is holomorphic everywhere. But we had to do with meromorphic Higgs bundles. And in this case, this becomes meromorphic. So it depends on the, I will go through the generalization right now. So it depends on the, on the Higgs bundle. Okay. Yes. This is our theorem. I don't think I understand. So this module is determined by the operator P. I mean this one that kills the free energies, and on every chart, it's locally defined by P. Okay, so let us do the generalization of topological recursion to the Hitchin framework. So we saw before that. So in my case, I will denote C the downstairs Riemann surface. I'm not sure. I don't recall the previous definition or notation. And E is a vector bundle of rank 2. And why do we need? We did it only for rank 2 because this topological recursion, we know how to do it precisely when this is a double cover. So the Higgs bundle, I mean, we saw what it is. This is a section of the endomorphism of E tensor, the canonical. So before it was just this notation. This is the canonical shift whose sections are holomorphic one forms. So when D is zero, I have to make this remark. So what is D? D is a divisor on a downstairs curve C. So this is C. And this will be the cotangent of C. And this D is just a sum MI PI for the different choices of the. So it's like we mark this curve. So in particular, what this means, if t is zero, then phi is holomorphic. And so this is like a 2x2 matrix of holomorphic one forms. This is the general setting of Hitchin. But if d is a divisor, then phi will be a 2x2 matrix of meromorphic one forms. And this, it will have poles along the divisor D. So I probably will not go through the details, but what we saw is that, well, in general, this is, I don't remember how this was called, Higgs, I think. We have the Hitchin map that goes to the pluricanonical, and this works for the genus of the downstairs curve, at least two. So it doesn't cover, for example, rational points. And it mainly send this to the spectral data that is, I don't know, minus 1 to the I times the trace on the exteriors of phi. And here we land in this sections of pluricanonical. So, this is just taking the characteristic polynomial. This is what it's saying. And the sigma over C, this is the cover of Riemann surfaces. It's an R2-1 cover. And then the genus of the spectral curve via Hitchin vibrations is R squared G minus 1 plus 1. So this comes for free in the holomorphic theory, if d equals to 0. So but in general, if phi is meromorphic Higgs field, so let me define the tautological one form first. So we have the cotangent bundle that is just the total bundle of the KC of the canonical. So let me call this pi, and one forms can be pulled back. This is the pullback of the canonical. So the cotangent is symplectic. This means that there exists eta, a symplectic one form. So this symplectic one form that is defined on the, it's actually a section of the T star C and then pi star of KC. So this is holomorphic in this case. And the spectral curve was sitting inside the cotangent. So this was like the zero section that I denoted b equals to 0. It's a copy of C. And the spectral curve will be here. So this eta is a section here. And we can again pull it back by this inclusion. So this is the pullback of So I have, let's say, the canonical, and I can pull back the eta and get, in fact, a one form on the spectral curve. This will be my choice of the 0-1 form. So this eta locally looks like ydx. So in the case of the cotangent, then this will be holomorphic in this case. So I will choose my W01 to be just the pullback of eta. So what do we do if the Higgs field is meromorphic? Well, almost the same, but I need to define a spectral curve. So why don't we take the determinant of phi minus eta I2? So we just look at the zero section of this determinant. And we have to realize this inside the compactified cotangent. So we introduce an infinity section. This is the projectivization of the canonical plus the structure shift. So what we did is to just realize the spectral curve inside the cotangent. But still, this becomes a double cover of the downstairs curve C. So in this case, the pullback of I will become meromorphic with simple poles of the infinity divisor. So this will be our choice of the unstable geometries, but we also have to deal with what happens if we have singular curves. So let me now... maybe I can define it here. So it can be the case that sigma that we defined in this way is singular. Okay, as it was in the Catalan case. So what we do is to take a resolution of singularities by blowing up all the singularities. So mainly in this case that we look at, these are Higgs bundles of rank 2, so the singularities are mild. They can be odd, they can be even cusps or odd cusps. So this is the even cusp. And it looks like this. And we blow it up several times, m times, and each time we will decrease this power by 1. And in the end, it will look like this. So, or it could be odd cusps. So this would be like this. And each time we will decrease this by 1. And in the end, it will be like this, I guess. Okay, so the general picture in the, so if sigma is singular and coming also from a meromorphic Higgs bundle of rank 2, the picture is we have C, we have the cotangent, and this lives inside the compactified cotangent. We have the spectral curve inside the compactified cotangent here. And we will take sigma hat to be a resolution of singularities. And this will live inside the blow up of this. So this will be sigma hat, that will be a blow up of sigma, and it will live inside the blow up of this star of C. So in the end, sigma hat will be a double cover of C. Okay, so the W01 is the one that we get from the pullback. So we pull back the eta here, and then we pull back this W01 on this resolution. So this is our choice of double cover and of 0,1, and now we have to define the 0,2. And maybe before we do this, let me say a few words about the space that we are working with. I mean, this compactified cotangent, it's a ruled surface over C. And what this means is that, well, in general, if C is P1, this is a Hirzebruch surface. But it has, it is fibered over C. And it can be described in terms of the pullback of the Picard group of C. So here the fibers are not linearly equivalent, because on P1 they are, two points are linearly equivalent, but on C they might not be. So instead of writing F, I will have to write F1, F2, just coming from fibers over C. And this is this notation. And this, that is the zero section. And because this is the projectivization of the canonical, plus the structure shift, and the canonical has degree 2g minus 2, we get the following intersection table. The zero section is a 2g minus 2. The zero section and the curve and the fiber intersect once, and F doesn't, and F moves, or two fibers don't meet. I will have to go through the coordinate chart. So in that example, I knew because I chose the particular Higgs field. But then you take your favorite choice of Higgs field, and you have to move around the coordinate charts. It can be singular around at any point. It doesn't have to be singular at the coordinate chart. I mean, you can impose singularities in the middle as well. You can impose any kind of singularities you want. No, they can be inside. Some of them will lie on the infinity section and the zero section, and more or less these are the only ones that we care, more or less. They can also be inside. Yes, it has simple poles at the infinity section. And, yeah. So, anyway, what we did as well is to identify the sigma hat with a divisor on this ruled surface. So this is like 2b plus af, and a is the degree that you get from intersection with b. So it doesn't have a particular form, but and then if it has singularities, you'll have to blow it up. And usually, the singularities, because it comes from a Higgs field of rank 2, they can be like double nodes, but they can be nodal, but even or odd cusps. Only these two cases can occur. And usually I think about the even cusp to be 2 to 2 m times, and the odd cusp will be 2 to 2 and 2 1. So in this case you can write it down precisely what this is. I mean, you'll have to subtract, you'll have to desingularize it. And you have to blow up infinitely near. And yeah, you can compute a genus. Yeah. This one, in order to desingularize it, you have to blow it up m times. Because what we do is to, when you blow up it once, you just take locally y equals x times maybe y1. And then you can reduce the degree of x and get like y1 squared equals x to a minus 2. And now you see it has, again, this shape. And you do it m times. And this is where these two comes from. To me, it represents how worse the singularity is. M represents the number of blow up, and 2 represents the double point. Yeah, in the end, it will give you a divisor here, and it's complicated. So it will give you a divisor here. It just depends on the, exceptional divisors that you introduce.
Is it a notation for divisor?
It's a notation for the singularity, I would say. It's just depending how the singularity is. I mean, I don't have to write it down. I just have to write down the divisor I obtain. But But this is, yeah, the way I think about it. Yeah? I mean, this gives precisely what the spectral curve is here. And I didn't write it down because it's complicated. A is determined from this, I don't know a priori. I have to do the intersection with B. I mean, if you know the spectral curve that you want to quantize, then this will determine A, and it will determine all the singularities. You'll have it fixed. But in this case, I'm doing in general. So A is can be anything. It moves with a curve, let's say. It depends on the curve. Okay, this is where we work on. We will work on a blown up ruled surface over C, and I just wanted to say that you do it as before. I mean, it's given by the genus formula that you. The arithmetic genus equals the geometric genus in this case, but this is a bit more complicated because it deals with a ruled surface. But you can write it in terms of A. So it is important to know the genus because we will get to know the ramification numbers and we can run the topological recursion. Okay, so what we saw in the end is that we get a double cover of Riemann surfaces. I mean, this proper transform, it's just something smooth, but it's a Riemann surface of a certain genus that we can easily compute. So now we need a choice of a two form. So let's see that this is our sigma hat. And this is our C. So let us choose a symplectic basis for the Riemann surface from the downstairs Riemann surface C to have the A cycles and the B cycles. So I want to choose a symplectic basis for the spectral curve such that it is fixed under small deformations. It doesn't move in a family. So it is determined from the base curve C. So what we can do is to take, I mean, this will be our A1, A2, and then AG. So we will get here corresponding A cycles that will denote A1 up to, I mean, AI up to AI star. So such that the push forward of AJ equals the push forward of AJ star equals AJ. So we can lift these cycles here. And now we can determine other cycles coming from the ramification points. So there are, by Riemann-Hurwitz, there are 4G-4 ramification points. And we will lift two of them outside and connect just two of them via non-intersecting path. This will determine, when we flip this, choice of 4G-3. Sorry? Yes. Algebraically non-intersecting. So this will determine precisely other 2G-3 A cycles. And this will complete a basis. So by Riemann-Hurwitz, there are precisely 4G-4 ramification points. And this will give us alpha 1 up to alpha 2G-3. And it will complete a basis of, it will complete a symplectic basis for sigma. This will be spanned by AI star and the alphas. And then the B ones that will be determined from these ones. So once we choose a symplectic basis, then we can choose a meromorphic two form And this is a proposition, for example, in Mumford. For any choice, so if for any Riemann surface and any two points that are distinct, there exists a unique meromorphic two-form, one-form, such that it is holomorphic everywhere but A and B. It has simple poles at A with residue 1 and at B with residue minus 1, and it's normalized with respect to the symplectic basis. So the integral along the symplectic basis of the omega A minus B of Z is 0. Where these are for all the A cycles of H1, of sigma, and Z. So locally, this, for example, this one form, one can write it as, I mean, locally it's just dz over z minus A and dz over z minus B with minus sign around A and around B. So our choice of the two form will be determined by this. So let us denote W02 of Z1, Z2 to be DZ1 of WZ1 minus B of Z2. I mean, locally, this will be like DZ1, DZ2 over Z1 minus Z2 squared. So it is meromorphic at sigma at any at the product of the Riemann surfaces and has a double pole along the diagonal. So, okay, there are 10 minutes left. Should I write down the topological recursion formula the way we define? I don't know what to do in this 10. Yeah. This will be these ones. So there will be these ones that we just created in this side. The ones that come from the downstairs curve C.
And what is it to be the
here? Yeah. H1 it can be anything. It is independent of B.
You wrote H1 of sigma on the left board.
Yes. This will be the A cycles. These are the A cycles, and the B cycles will be determined from the A cycles. So in this, here we just looked at the A cycles part. And this is what we care about in this normalization. The B ones will be determined, so we don't even bother. Okay. So topological recursion. It is a mechanism to define the meromorphic n forms on products of sigmas. So we have our choice of omega 1 and omega 0 2, and double curve of Riemann surfaces. So the way we define is the WGN of Z1 up to Zn. It is 1 over 2 pi I times the sum over all the ramification points. So this double cover will have a set of ramification points along the, and here we'll have to compute a lot of residues integrals. This will be Z hat. So this is our two form, this is our one form, times omega g minus 1 n plus 1 of z z hat z2 zn plus this is what we call the kernel G1 plus G2 equals to G, I union J equals to 2N. So we can see that this has the same shape as the recursion of Ketel numbers of WG1 I plus 1 of Z, ZI times WG2 J plus 1 of Z hat ZJ. So this is a definition where Z represents we have a double cover of Riemann surfaces along some branch along some ramification points, and above all every Z we will above every point here X will have 2 points here, Z and Z bar. So we will call that Z bar is the Galois conjugate with respect to Z. So the way we think about it is that this is given by a degree 2 equation, and Z hat will be like the 2 solutions. And this is actually the constraint that makes us to do it only for Higgs fields of rank 2, because this is the definition of topological recursion where it actually deals with the fiber over a point. So Z and Z hat are conjugate to each other. So this way, the WGNs, these meromorphic N forms, are symmetric, are skew symmetric. So this means that if we place a minus ZI anywhere, this result will be flipped by minus GN of Z1 up to ZN and have poles only along the ramification divisors on each variable. And this will allow us to integrate. So we'll define the free energies, FGNs, to be functions on universal curve of the spectral curve sigma hat. This is the universal cover, such that d1 dn of fgn equals the wgn. And these are skew symmetric. So we will have to take integrals. We'll have to integrate these n forms n times. And in order to make this definition unique, because this integration is defined up to a constant, we ask the condition that on each variable this is skew symmetric. So then the theorem that topological recursion can be calculated should be applied on the desingularization. So this is the resolution of singularities of the spectral curve. And the definition of the recursive way of defining this meromorphic function with the geometry on Riemann surfaces tells us that, in fact, these free energies are meromorphic functions, but they satisfy a recursion equation, a differential recursion equation. So it is a recursion of the free energies. So this is the first part. And then the second part, it is similar. There exists a choice of a differential operator that kills the generating function of the free energies. So this differential operator is actually obtained from the spectral curve by just replacing y equals h bar ddx. And psi is the same generating function that we introduced before. So in this case, this is the generalization of the Ketel numbers, for example. That was the first example done. And this was the first quantization done. And the topological recursion, it loses all the information here of the WGNs, and more or less it depends only on the spectral curve. So these free energies are defined by the first relation, and they come defined with a geometry. So X, X is on C. Yeah, so let's see. So it is on the upstairs cover. I mean, more or less locally, if sigma looks like, I don't know, a0 x, x squared. Zero plus this one x. Yes. Usually y is according to above. And this is, yeah.
So earlier you were mentioning.
Yes, yes. Yes. So this is yeah, one can move along the globally. So we think yes, but we don't have a proof of this. So yeah, I was planning to talk also about the topological quantum field theories, but I don't think I have the time. I'm sorry. So the psi, it was defined to be the exponential of some m runs from 0 of h m minus 1 s m of x. So this was the psi of x and y. So we want that the semi-classical limit. So we cannot take the limit when h approaches 0, the normal limit. So we have to take the semi-classical limit. Recovers the spectral curve that we started with, the sigma, not the normalization. And what we mean by this is that when we take the limit when h approaches 0 of e to minus 1 over h s 0 of x, p of x, and h bar d dx, e of 1 over h s 0 of x, so the limit of h bar approaching 0 recovers precisely the spectral curve. Sigma. Oh, yeah? Does it make sense? So you can't apply the normal limit when h bar approaches zero in this, because here this will, I mean, yeah, this is not defined that the h bar equals to zero. So you take the semi-classical limit, and by semi-classical limit says that you slightly change a little bit your operator when you take the limit when h bar equals to 0. And this will be a different operators, and once you apply it to the generating function psi, then you will recover the spectral curve here.
Thank you.